I've just arrived at the cake. There's a very small crowd. Well, there's not a crowd, really. Nobody knows this is going to happen. There's just some people looking at books. So now we can try and generate an audience, which is something that I used to do when I was in a busker. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to cut the cake shortly. The shop has been opened, but this is the official opening of the shop. And here is the cake, which is in the shape of a book, but you can't read it, but you can eat it. Okay, let's go. Into the cake, eyes shut, plunging into a letter, and it says W, Birmingham, 21, October 1999. And we land on the letter, well, in between 19... Sorry, I spat on the cake then. I'll have that bit. There we are, the cake is officially cut. Woo!
Going to put my cagoule to one side. Here's my cagoule, and here's one side. It's some autobiographical stuff, really. This first section, largely autobiographical, and I'm going to read a series of poems. And the first one is called "Love in Luton." I was three or four when I lost my heart to a boy on the telly with a vital part in a cowboy show called Laramie. I'd go to bed and imagine he was there with me. I'd give a big kiss to the one I'd seen in the scheduled slot on the little screen. When my primary schooling had begun, I fell in love with a nun. I was yet to reach the common fear of saying what I meant, and I bent her ear. I want to kiss you, sister, I told her straight. Thank you, John, she said. That's great. Then she added that she was spoken for by the word of God, and I spoke no more. More love in Luton. At 10, I loved Jane, but was frightened to say, and I suffered frustration throughout the school day. I kicked at her ankles, it rankled and bought attention, but not the affection I sought. The strength of my feelings I couldn't admit, and out of my weakness I acted the git, and my acting was good. Then Wojtek appeared in a neighbouring seat. He said that her writing was lovely and neat. He said that her being was really complete, and this she preferred to the ends of my feet. Wojtek and she became chummy and close. It churned up my tummy, it made me morose. Back at our bungalow, lacking delight, I blurted the hurting at dinner one night. I said how I loved her and it wasn't right, explaining how Wojtek was deeply preferred. As soon as I'd spoken, my ear got a pull from my dad, who said, "Wait till your plate isn't full before you start speaking." I answered, "It's not plate, Dad, it's mouth." And he said, "Oh yes, sorry, John, I forgot." So letting my family in on my grief, it didn't provide a great deal of relief. Now looking back on the burden and pain of unspoken feeling congealing for Jane, I feel that some justice was done for the way I treated my sister to loads of dismay. I was very unchristian, but still went to church, a fan of the man who was pinned to the perch. I served on the altar, spoke Latin aloud, and so did my brother. My mother was proud of us knelt in our white and our black. I held the incense, my brother the slack of the thing with the holes that created the stench. And back home my father tried teaching him French, my father's first language, my father's first son. And one extra lesson when praying was done, but one day the Sunday tradition was broke. Why, I'm not sure, but my dad never spoke in the language thereafter. Except for the day when his mother came over and then went away. We had no exposure to uncles and aunts. My dad's only friends were his God and his plants. Away from home. This is about moving away from... We lived in Luton until I was about 16 and we moved to Bristol. In Bristol at first, I missed Luton a lot. Rovers and City, for me, they were not a viable substitute. I was bereft of the little in Luton I'd recently left. But doing my A-levels, I would become the class entertainer. And I found a chum with a sense of the comic the same as my own. I was Lutonless, yes, but no longer alone. My A-levels over, I put on a tie. I worked in an office, a government guy. And then on the buses, accepting the fares, relaxing in trousers, so glad to be flares. I did meditation, I looked to the east. My father got worried and spoke to the priest. We argued so often because I was not what he would call normal, his favourite slot. Once I came home after ringing my bell and my father said, "How many times must I tell you, John? Please hang your coat up, it's not a hotel." And I turned and I thumped him and over he fell. I helped him get up into one of the chairs and I begged him to say he had fell down the stairs and he answered, "All right," with a bump on his brow, "but it's lucky we're not in the bungalow now, John."
Beneath the Tower of Eiffel, there was my father's native land. French was his first language, but his suits were second hand. Actually, the suits he wore were off the peg and new. They fitted him so badly, though. The essence here is true. Told my dad I liked his glasses. He said, "Do you, John? Well, you're welcome to have them, son. When I have gone to meet my maker, I don't think I'll need to have them on." These glasses were my father's. He saw the world through these. And sometimes what I'm looking at, it seems my father sees. "These glasses don't feel right," he says. "Nothing's very clear. What do you expect?" I answer, "You're not real." Lenses are my prescription. Not yours, Dad. Different ones.
Okay, and at this point I thought what it would be nice to do is to attempt some improvised poems. So I'm going to take a suggestion of a subject or perhaps even something to give it the local flavour, perhaps something Birmingham, and I'll just try and, even without, I probably won't have knowledge of the place, but I will just still attempt without knowledge. To give knowledge, which is what happens so much with politicians. And again?
Safari Park.
Safari Park. The Safari Park in Brum. I have come here today to see all these animals. Some are brown and some are orange and some are grey. Hooray. Hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. It's a bit depressing when these get more applause than the ones I spend hours on.
Villa Park.
Oh, the spark of maroon. Is it maroon? No, it is not maroon. It is claret. Claret and maroon. You can't drink maroon, but you can drink claret, but you can't drink Villa. If you spill a drop of Villa, then you're bicky bocky boo. It's going well to the bicky bocky boo, isn't it, sir? But what I thought was it would be a bit of fun to just sort of have a game of football in the bookshop, just sort of break the rules a little bit and have somebody go in goal. And I'm going to take some shots at you, just for a bit of fun. I've got to choose somebody from the audience. Would you mind going in goal?
Yeah,
the goals are there by Nigel. If you could just move that chair out of the way. I'm so glad you said yes. You can sit in goal, yeah, and be quite good fun. So we've got a goal. Are you okay there? So what do you normally do for a living, sir?
I was a teacher.
And now you're a goalkeeper. Okay.
I was a teacher of goalkeeping.
Yeah, leave the jokes to me, mate. Okay. So would you do the throwing, sir? Okay.
Do the throwing, madam.
All right, we'll have a poem to finish up with. But I just thought we might as well open it out to questions now. So I'm going to sit down. Does anybody want to ask a question?
Apart from John Hegley, who is your favourite poet?
My favourite poet. I don't know. Many poets I like. Louis MacNeice. I do bagpipe music. If I could recommend some poems to you, there's a poem called Bagpipe Music by Louis MacNeice. It's an absolutely fantastic piece of work. Although I don't understand it, but it really affects me quite enormously. And then there's one by Hilaire Belloc. Oh, sorry. You see how these things? I said Hilaire Belloc. Are you leaving because you don't like the way the afternoon's going? You've got to go to college. Yeah, I think I probably need to go and all, actually.
I have two questions.
You can have one. You might have two, you can only ask one. No, you
so
can't really.
I'll ask the most important part for me. I understand that you create a poem just here on the spot, but when you find really inspired to write a poem, how do you feel that need of writing a poem? Can you tell me something about your mind when you feel the urge of writing a poem, or just decide today I'm going to write a poem, or what is that?
What's the other question?
Have you used the computer to write poems, or old technology of pencil?
Yeah, I just use a pen. And finally, thank you very much indeed. Some Brummy Bits.
I did a term in Birmingham when I was in a play. The city is an underdog, not obviously pretty, but it still has its day, chum. The weekends I came home. It may not be Rome, but I like to have a roam about. And I found exalted bolters at an unexalted bill. And there's a street to swell your constitution there called Constitution Hill.